Or 50, or, you know, but, you know, we don't have enough to.
Or 40.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Zebra Sharks Podcast. Coach Gene Clemens here, as always, with Coach Whit LeJure of Bridgeton Academy. It's getting close to that time. Coach Whit, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, Wednesday afternoon here in Bridgeton, that's a half day of school in the prep school world. So Wednesdays are always, always good. Wednesdays feel a little bit like Fridays. So things are good. Try to bring some noontime juice to this pod.
Absolutely. If you're listening, we are recording this in the middle of the day as opposed to like the end of the day when we would normally be recording. So a little different vibe, a little different feel. There's no drinks in hand, but definitely a lot of things going on in the world of sports, and definitely in the world of basketball. The NCAA has kicked off the basketball season, and over the first few days of the season, one thing that I think is going to become evident, and this is just my opinion, and Whit, you can tell me how you feel about it, but I feel like there are going to be a lot, these teams that have these older players, these guys that said, hey, you know, maybe not the NBA for me this year, or maybe not professional sports in some capacity this year. I'm going to come back and do it again. Those super duper seniors. We're getting to the end of that run where we have the super duper senior. We're getting to the end of that run where you have that sixth year and in some cases seventh year guy that's bounced and he's been with three different teams now, or maybe even four. But I think that teams that have an abundance of those guys, or more of those guys than not, are going to be very difficult to deal with. And you know, I like to think that basketball is the ultimate equalizer, but there is a difference when you've got 22 and 23 year old men playing against teams with 18 and 19 year old young men.
Yeah, well, I would just say what you're talking about is a kind of a cardinal rule in sport, which is, you know, experience matters. And older teams, I think, have been ruling the day for a while. So I think what you're talking about with regard to the COVID and extra year, I mean, that just puts, you know, that kind of thing on steroids, in my opinion. So it just, you know, exaggerates the advantage that older teams can have. That being said, you know, I'm reminded of a funny Jimmy Valvano story way back when he took over at Bucknell, and his first game was at Syracuse. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, you got everyone coming back. I said, yeah, I got everyone coming back. They didn't win a game last year. You know, that everyone coming back, I mean, experience only matters if the experience is good. But I hear you loud and clear. Interesting that Kentucky has gone trying back to the young formula. You know, you've been trying to dabble in more of that older thing without a lot of luck. And you know, I think ebbs and flows.
Well, I mean, I think obviously we're talking about teams with older players who are good. We're not talking about the teams that are not good bringing back everybody. And what we see in this landscape is when you're not good, you don't bring everybody back. In this landscape, when you're not good, your team looks completely different the next year, either because you wanted to make changes as a coach or because the players wanted to make changes. I see a lot of players, new faces in new places, that were the leading scorer on a bad team last year that are now on a team that's better. And my concern with some of those is that, hey, man, you were an 18-point scorer on a bad team because you just got to shoot all the reckless shots that you wanted to shoot. Can you be an efficient 14-point scorer or a 12-point scorer on a really good team? And I think that's where you're seeing St. John. They're going to have to figure that out. You're seeing places where they've brought in a lot of grad transfers or just transfers in general out of the portal, and some of those teams are bringing in dudes who were good. North Carolina's dealing with this a little bit, bringing in guys from outside who have an ability to score, but the team that they were on the year before, they just didn't have to worry about the structure that they have to now worry about. And so that'll be interesting to see. But, I mean, we were talking about it last pod. FAU brings back the entire team sans one player. Like, that's going to make a difference in whether or not you're winning and whether or not you're not winning or you have a chance to go back. Kansas, it's not a bunch of babies there. It's some dudes. It's some older dudes. I think what had happened for a while was, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like I felt like the players were leaving after the first, second, you know what I'm saying, maybe third year. And so you didn't see a lot of teams around the country keeping players for longer than, you know, maybe 2 years, in some cases 3 years, their best players anyway. And so what happened was is teams like Kentucky and even Duke to a certain extent started taking advantage of having these freshman-led teams or freshman-sophomore-led teams that could beat these older teams, because the teams that had older players as their leaders were usually teams that didn't have really good older players as their leaders, outside of maybe like a Villanova who seemed to be zigging when everybody else was zagging.
Well, I mean, once again, your soliloquy has left me dazed, confused, and with a number of reactions. I don't argue with anything you said. I think it'll be interesting. It would be interesting to watch specifically some of the transfers who hope themselves to be impact players at new places and whose new coaches hope they are impactful players. It'll be interesting to see the ones that really do well and the ones maybe who struggle. I've always kept an eye on, you know, players that can play, move up a level, you can still play. You can't play, you move down a level, can't play. Obviously, good players, you know, at good programs, they're trying to trade, you know, they're trying to trade up, you know. It doesn't always happen, like you say. So I think that is fascinating. Miami has done what you're talking about seemingly as well as anybody in the past few years, where they're reloading with old players and a whole conglomerate of, and done it very, very well.
Spanish Gym.
Spanish Gym. And then I think I got one other reaction, but like, again, you dazed and confused me so much, I've lost it. So maybe it'll come back to me. Might have had something to do. Who the hell were you talking about? Duke at one point? I don't know. You lost me.
Like Kentucky and Duke, like getting it done with younger, younger leaders, as opposed to just because guys were leaving earlier. Like, I just felt like guys were.
You know what? Yeah. I'm sorry.
No,
No, you know what's interesting? The third, it was toward the end of what you were talking about. The NIL, okay, just to add that into there, the NIL is going to keep guys around longer because, obviously, I think they're going to be able to listen to some better advice and not simply go for broke on the professional level and say, you know what, maybe another year would serve me well. And, you know, I got enough money in my pocket to buy some dinner and go out to the movies or whatever it might be. So that may actually have a positive influence on getting teams, more teams with more older players.
Yeah, I think it may be a way of keeping the we don't quite know players, but I think that those guys who believe that they're going to be NBA players are leaving right now because that NIL money is not looking like that NBA money. That NBA money is different. They're just handing out $40 and $50 million contracts to people who don't deserve them. It's fantastic to watch. Like I'm not hating on anybody for getting their money. I just go, there's no way that I would have paid that guy that type of money. I think players who look at themselves as NBAers are trying to get there as soon as possible. But I think you're right in the sense of the guys who are being realistic with themselves and going, yeah, I can possibly make the NBA if I'm given the opportunity, may say, yo, I'm gonna sit here and chill in college because, you know, this bird in the hand is better than those two in the bush. And so that, you know, who I really will be interested in watching over the next few years is Gonzaga. I want to see what Gonzaga and teams like Gonzaga, you know, the basketball school with no football. So, like, how strong is the alumni base? Can they be able to create NIL situations that are competitive with the teams that also have this entire football backing when it comes to, you know, a fan base and alumni and people that would invest into the program. I want to see what they do to combat all of this. Because I feel like they've just been kind of playing their own game and it's worked for them. But now with the money coming into play, is that going to affect them, or will they have their own little kind of niche collective that allows them to still attract those guys that would, you know, that five-star or that four-star plus that they've been getting that have chosen Gonzaga over some of the other big name programs?
Yeah, that's a worthy point you make.
We're going to be doing a thing, by the way, y'all, and we'll bring it to you on the next pod or the next pod that we do. Look out for I know we've teased it a lot, but look out for our discussion with Konzo Martin this weekend. We're going to drop that as a bonus pod. Great conversation. Extremely inspirational, man. One I'd love to meet and chop it up and you know, break bread with in person one day. Konzo Martin was a fantastic interview, and we thank him again for joining us. But next week when we holler at you guys, we're going to start doing a thing where we watch a team that we haven't watched. And the reason that I thought about it and I brought it to Coach Witt's attention and he seemed on board is it's just so many. There are just so many, like, college basketball teams. Like, there's so many of them. And, like, you can go an entire year and only watch a handful of basketball teams just because – those are the guys that you're into. So I'm really looking forward to getting to see teams that I haven't paid a lot of attention to. What about you, Whit? What are some of the things you're looking forward to there?
Well, I mean, I think your suggestion of that is good because, you know, I don't, I guess with my own season, I mean, I'm not like watching college hoop 24/7, but I definitely have games on a lot, and I'll sometimes save them to the, you know, library of my TV and you know, look at things that people are doing. So I kind of have fun with that. So this will give me even more reason to look at some teams. I was watching just, you know, obviously Duke's a household name, but I was watching some of the Dartmouth Duke game the other night. I watch a fair amount of Division III. Division III kicks off tonight too. So, you know, the college basketball world obviously is not all about high major Division I. Division III, I mean, a few teams have played. Again, just like the Division I stuff we talked about, I saw a good Division III. Brandeis, shout out to Gene Bain, beat a good NE10 Division II Assumption team last week. So same thing going on where I think the levels are blurry, you know, contrary to what some might think. Yeah, I think looking forward to watching different teams play and different levels, though. Different levels also. Good Division II games, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I have a, you know, one of the good things about the different apps now is that, and this is an underrated thing about the ESPN Plus app. I don't like the fact that ESPN Plus doesn't include certain games that I feel like it should, like ESPN 3 games. But what ESPN Plus does have is an abundance of teams that you probably never even heard of, schools that you don't, and you're like, oh snap, they're playing this school, and you just plug it in and you get to see them live right there. Flow Sports is another place where you can see, especially a lot of Division II games on Flow Sports. So if you have the ESPN Plus app and if you have Flow Sports app, you can join in with us and hit us up, like shoot us a tweet or an Instagram post, leave a message in the message area for the pod. Like, what game have you watched? What team have you watched that you've never watched before? And what's your takeaway? So every week we're going to come in, we're going to talk about a team that we got a chance to watch, or maybe a game with a couple teams that we had a chance to watch that we haven't watched before. And we're going to talk about our takeaways. And I'm looking forward to watching that progress and really kind of showcasing and shedding some light on teams that maybe our audience haven't heard about before. And if they have, then great. Then join in the conversation with us. We'd love to have it.
Hey, speaking of takeaways, I think, you know, curious what your takeaway is on the, James Madison win over Michigan State to kick off the year that's got everyone's attention. And number two, you know, I don't think we should be doing a pod on college basketball without at least having a take on Coach Bob Knight passing, icon in the game. So your takeaway on both of those. I obviously, full disclosure, I was interested in your pre-pod thoughts on Coach Izzo.
Yeah. Anybody who's listened to this pod and anybody who knows me knows that in Izzo, I trust. Like, I am an Izzo guy. I've said it before. If I ever had a son that could play basketball at that level, I would send him to play for Izzo in a heartbeat, drop the bags off and never worry about him again. Like, I have a high respect and admiration for Izzo. That being said, time does pass, and respectfully to Izzo, and we don't know that this is the case because it's only one game, but at some point it catches up with everybody, and some people are not as good at making the transition from the way they used to be able to do things to the way they have to do things now. And one of the things that comes with recruiting at a high level means you have to get those new age players who think about things in a new age way. If you're recruiting and you're just recruiting to your team and to your style and to your philosophy, you can go out there and find guys who may not be a top 10, top 25 on the projected recruits, top 50, top 100, but you can still find really good players that fit your system and maybe are good with some of the things that you do in the way in which you get down. But if you're recruiting those top tier guys, there's going to be some adjustment to how you handle them. And if you can't adjust to how you handle them, then the product's going to suffer. Because I 100% believe that some of these young men that are out here playing basketball and football and any other team sport, when they're only thinking about themselves, they can care less about whether or not they're winning you a football game or a basketball game. And so it made me say to Witt what if maybe time is passed up on Izzo? Maybe his time is up. Maybe this is the writing on the wall. And you can hear it. I hope you can hear it. Like, it pains me to even say that because, like I said, I hold him in such high regard, and I 100% hope I'm wrong. But it didn't look good. I watched the game. It didn't look good. And it didn't look as if there was some type of cohesiveness between coach and players. It looked haphazard. And I've been using that word a lot for the team that I root for. But it definitely applies in the case of Tom Izzo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I think it's a nice take if it was on, you know, network TV or something. But I think it's just a case that you know, we overreact to things now. I mean, I watched Indiana play too, and they didn't look very good against who the heck did they just play? Someone that's only you got it there. I just watched it. Indiana was playing maybe Robert
Morris. Florida Gulf Coast.
Oh, it was Florida Gulf Coast. Okay. Yep. Had a few games going on.
So quick.
Yeah, that ain't the slam dunk Florida Gulf Coast team either, you know. Just and so Indiana just looked, yeah, and you know, and they won by six or something. And it's funny how some teams, you know, just don't look like they've gelled at all this early in the season, and yet other teams come out humming a little bit. I think it just takes some teams and players, to your point, a while sometimes. Now, occasionally it doesn't come together at all, obviously, like our friends on Tobacco Road a year ago. So, but most of the time, those better teams just need a few games to get it going, which is why John Thompson back in the day, or Syracuse, or a lot of teams would just beat up on chopped liver, relatively speaking, until they could kind of find their groove. And that's not the way you build a schedule today anymore. So, for a lot of reasons.
I mean, there's still some teams out there beating up on chopped liver. I mean, if you see some of these schedules, like, there's some guys that are still doing it that way. I think my and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Mike Woodson doesn't come from a heavy college background, right? Like, his coaching isn't collegiate. So I think he might be in a situation where he's still figuring this thing out, right? Like,
with Tom Izzo,
that's not the case. He's a college basketball lifer.
But I mean, again, just to flip your argument, you know, you'd say, well, Woodson's coming from a place where young guns and superb talent, you know, he's experienced that sort of thing. So from a connection standpoint and all of that, you'd think he might actually have the, you know, panache to kind of go there. I'm not buying into all you're selling on that thing anyway, because you know, the common denominator for good players and coaches together to get along is competitiveness, in my humble opinion. So And when you see a kid, and that actually was mentioned on the Indiana broadcast, they're one of their 7-footer that transferred in from Oregon. You know, I mean, a clear pro prospect, but you know, there's people that question his motor. So that'll get teams and coaches in trouble every time.
Can you be a clear pro prospect if people are questioning your motor?
The answer is yes. Since the beginning of time, people will always take chances if the talent, skill set, whatever it might be, is high enough. So the answer is yes, but the answer just as many times is you're playing with fool's gold.
I feel like the big man is where you and I have our biggest, like, dissension. Like, I feel like the big man is our line of demarcation. Like, cause you're still of the mindset of, you know, get that big. You can't teach 7 foot, right?
And I don't know where. What have you been listening? Do I have another pod that you've been listening to?
Where no, I listen to you when you talk about people. When you talk about, well, you know, the size, because I've made the argument before, like, why are people still out here trying to recruit these 7-footers that can't play basketball? And you keep on like coming to their defense.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying.
Yeah.
Because I think if you just don't have if you have a good one, great. Like, the good ones are going to dominate. Like, the Philip, Purdue, they're going to score a billion points because you can't do anything with him inside. You can't do anything with Dickinson inside. Like, there are a couple of teams who have big men, like legitimate, high-quality big men. But the rest of them just got dudes that are tall. And those dudes that are tall, they don't scare a 6'7" dude at all. Like, a 6'7" dude that's really about this action could care less that you're 7 foot. And so, like, I feel like this might be a season where you see these big men really eat. But when they run up against one of those dogs, one of those 6'8", 6'7" goons, like, it might be a rough night for the big guy. Not those two big guys. Those two big guys are not going to have a rough night. They're gonna run roughshod all over college basketball this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, other than the fact that, I mean, I think, you know, most programs at most levels are going to try to develop a few players, and one of the players they're going to try to develop is a big, because not everyone can get, you know, the so-called All-American or whatever we want to call that guy, and plenty of players at every position do develop and outkick their coverage, so to speak. So I think that's just, you know, part of your program is and should be typically appropriate size. But within that, there's, you know, a lot of different ways to play. And I don't disagree with you.
So you think that my Izzo take is just like, it's meritless. Like, I'm going too far.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going too far, but I know you're going too far. You're just putting it out there. Like, it's a good take, and it obviously, to me, feels like, you know, a side, you know, it feels like part of the Belichick take. You know, it's somewhere we like to go, and I'm probably being sensitive because I'm 64, so it's like, you know, okay, let's put a take out there where the games pass these people by. And I just, you know, I don't believe that is feasible. I think there's just, I just think these team sports, okay, at the level we're talking about, are so dynamic that it just, you know, an easy, we like quick fixes, we like easy answers, we like hot takes. So pointing at the coach or whatever, whoever, whatever it is, pointing at the star player, pointing at the quarterback, you know, that's just a, that's a nice place to go, and it sells, but it's not always the truth, you know, and I'm not saying it can't be. I'm not saying it isn't. That's all I'm saying. So I, you know,
what if it's the game hasn't passed them by, but the ability to connect has.
And I would just jump in there because I almost started going down that point. I mean, on the surface, no one has connected with their teams any better, well documented, than Izzo, you know, because I think
absolutely.
I mentioned Coach Knight earlier. Like, you know, Coach Knight was tough, and the people that swore by him swore by him. The people that think that he's, you know, just an awful human being and bully, I mean, they've got their case. But Izzo's had this Rolly Massimino like, and at a much higher level. And I think, you know, God bless Rolly too, but far better track record of coaching his guys up, but you know, them feeling the love, so to speak. So I just don't see, it's hard for me to believe that there's any change in the way he relates or connects, right? But anytime you put 15 players and 6 or 7 coaches in a room and this and that, and you know, there's a lot of dynamics there. So I think that, and that's kind of all he was suggesting with, like, with, well, I may, hey, a couple of these freshmen that are really good, we may have, you know, there's pecking order things, there's chemistry things, there's so many things that can be temporary, you know, that so it's the connections that are running throughout the team may be the real issue, not the ability of one person to connect to the team. Like, it's this one-to-one thing. That I think that's my point.
Okay. I want to get into Bob Knight. I texted you last week, I believe it was, right? And I text you, I said, hey, Bob Knight passed. You said you hadn't heard that yet. What was your first initial thought when you heard that Bobby Knight had passed?
Well, I mean, sadness for the family, because, you know, Patrick played for me when I was at New Hampton in 1989, and I stayed in touch a little bit, not only, you know, not as much actually with him as his brother Tim, but, you know, certainly aware. And I knew that, like a lot of people did, that Bobby wasn't doing great, you know, so I knew he had health issues. So mostly sad for the family, and then, you know, chance to reflect on just another icon in the game, just like, you know, it's there's icons in life, and he's one. And so had a lot, a flood of kind of reflections on you know, what it kind of all meant. Because I mean, in some ways he did, I mean, not just because his son came and played for me, and that was obviously neat, and I was probably a little bit too young to fully appreciate that whole dynamic, but more so that he was such an influencer on the game and the way it was. And I'm talking about the X's and O's, not the style. Okay. I'm talking specifically about motion offense. So concepts on offense, defense, that people that I was learning from, you know, had studied him. And I, so it's like, here's, you know, here's a guy that's, again, obviously shaped basketball for many decades. And so you know, that's something, where, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, a legend in the game. You can't tell the story of basketball without Bobby Knight, right?
He was always, yeah, I'll tell you, I mean just talking nicer, he was always, you know, he gave Pete Newell was a friend of his, so he always gave great credit to Pete Newell and was very outspoken in his condemnation of John Wooden. You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, John Wooden and the whole buying players, and off the top of my head, I can't remember the whatever Sam's name was, the real estate guy that, you know, kind of was doing what NIL is doing these days. You know, Knight was always very openly critical of Wooden, whereas, you know, Wooden is so revered because that's kind of a fascinating side piece.
Yeah. So I find myself landing on multiple sides with Bob Knight, right? As a coach, I say, you know, one of the greatest in the game when I think about it just from a coach's perspective. As a media person, like what he brought to the table was a level of genuine, a level of real, a level of honest that we just don't get from coaches, right? Like if something wasn't going right, he didn't go up there and sugarcoat it and make excuses. He put the blame where the blame should be, in his opinion. He didn't really have a whole lot of patience for the BS and all of that. Then I look at it from a player's perspective, and I'll tell you this, because the question always seems to come up in barbershop conversations or wherever you gather with other people who talk sports. Would you play for Bobby Knight? So I'm going to tell you mine, and I want you to tell me yours. Yes, I would play for Bobby Knight. I'm here for all of the aggressiveness that Bobby Knight brings, as long as I'm allowed to be aggressive back. If I'm allowed to be aggressive back, then you can come at me with whatever you want. Like, if you cuss me out, though, expect to get some of these curse words back. Expect to get some of these curse words back, because if you elevate me, if you trigger me to the level where I feel that this is combative, I'm going to let you know about it. And as long as he's cool with that in the confines of a practice, not in a showing up type of way, like in the public, but if he's okay with me shooting back sometimes, I'm good. Now, if he's on the, or I'm me and I'm just going to do this to you and you just have to sit there and take it all the time, nah, I'm not. That's not going to work for me, because I'm just not built that way. I can't be bullied. I don't even have that in me. I can't be bullied. I don't even really consider it bullied, but I'm trying to put a name to it, and it's probably not the... Actually, you know what? It might be the right name to it, but I just know I can't do it. I'm down for it. I like hard coaching. I want to be coached hard. I want to be told when I screw up. But if you take it to the level of aggression that Bobby Knight is taking it to on occasion, it's cool. I'm here for it. Just know that I am most likely going to, if you put your hands on me, I am most likely going to not just sit there and allow you to put your hands on me. And if we're good with that, then cool. We ain't going to have no problems. But if that ain't what we're doing, with respect, Mr. Knight, Coach Knight, I'm not going to be able to do it. What about you? Yeah, would you play for Bobby Knight?
I mean, I'd like to say yes and sign up for all that. And certainly at the time, I know my dear friend, Rich McLeod, who coached me as a senior in high school that I'd known in our town for, he came in when we were seniors. And I mean, it was pretty hard coaching. I'm not going to call him Bob Knight, but I could, you know, he certainly got the seniors' attention, both by words and deed. I don't know. So I think it would be interesting to ask people in the program, to your point, which is a really good one, about, you know, what that tolerance level might have been. It reminds me, Jimmy Boylan, who I coached for at the University of New Hampshire, played for Al McGuire, at Marquette. He was a starting guard. And so, you know, I'd asked Jimmy a ton of questions. And Jimmy told me a story. I think I've shared in this pod before, but he said, "Look, there was a fight, you know, every other day at Marquette, and Al McGuire was right in the middle of it." To your point, so when you describe what you're talking about, I mean, McGuire, you know, became a folksy meat. I mean, he was great, and he was, you know, just a hell of a him and Dick Enberg on announcing games in the 70s was off the chart, late 70s, early 80s. But you know, I think it was definitely a culture of what you're talking about, where it was very, very aggressive and combative, if you will. But you know, he was dishing it out, but taking it too. I'm not certain that probably flew in Indiana, but it would be an interesting question to find out how much so, if some of his players. I bet you sort of like other things on teams, I bet you there were guys that he could probably take the pushback from more than others, is kind of what I suspect. But you know, who knows. I do think this too, that in a lot of ways, I've had this conversation before. I mean, Knight was, you know, he was marketing and branding and selling in his own honest way, like you're talking about, long before, in ways that were very clever before what we have today. You know, I mean, his Bob Knight was a brand, and that wasn't all just, you know, a lot of it was real, but there was plenty to that that was marketed as well.
So you think some of that was cappuccino? You think some of that was just played up for the cameras?
Yeah, I think some. I mean, I'm just saying some, and I'm not talking about, you know, in practice aggression, or I'm just saying, yeah, there's a persona, you know. And then people, I'm again putting different firsthand accounts or things that I know, you know, as maybe as you get, you know, you start, you know, when you have so much success and acclaim, people, you know, it starts, you got to fight off maybe the inclination to make it about yourself or any of that stuff. So, you know, I think people will say he stopped recruiting the same way maybe he did as a younger coach, and, you know, he could just coach and win with anyone. And you know, you just a certain level of arrogance sometimes that can almost naturally develop when you've had too much. So I think there's some of that, but I'm also saying there's also a you know, a shtick that you use, that, you know, once it works and people are buying it, you just tend to, you know, throw it out there pretty good.
Okay. So let's, and again, you know, on rest in peace to Bob Knight, and thoughts and prayers to his family. 83 years old, if I'm
that's right, remembering that's correctly, right.
83 yeah. years old. So didn't necessarily get cheated, you know, but never like no time is ever the right time. So, you know, we definitely know that we've lost a luminary, regardless of what people think about him as a person. He is a basketball luminary.
I think most people ultimately acknowledge the contradictions and whatnot that you know, that you're treading around. I mean, that's I think the truth in it. And, you know, I think his were maybe bigger or maybe just more visible or something than other folks. Yeah. But you know, we're all.
See, I think that's the humanization of him, though. That is the part that makes, like, I don't particularly hold that stuff against him. Like, he's you can't be great at everything, right? Like, I think it's interesting when you hear the little stories that get out about Coach K behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Very Bob Knight-esque, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And but Coach K maybe to his credit, maybe to whatever, was able to keep that bottled in public.
And so, just to stop, cut you off there. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Because he, right, at a younger age, you know, so less, right, on the way up, certainly and rightfully has recognized, okay, this is probably not going to fly well in today, right? Had enough sense that, nope, there's going to be this and there's going to be that, which for a couple of decades worked, you know. Yeah. Today, obviously, that raises questions to even, you know, that wouldn't hold up today because everyone's privy to everything. So,
yeah.
You know,
I also want to go on record as saying that I apply that same logic to John Thompson and yeah. to and to Coach Chaney yeah. and to some of the other guys who kind of ruled with an iron fist when it came to how they coached and their level of aggression with players. Yeah. I'm all for it. Just know that. That you're going to get aggression back. And I know Big yeah. John, I know Big John had some hands, but he was going to have to show me how quick he was if he did me how I know for a fact he did a couple players over there at Georgetown. So, and I love, by the way, I love John Thompson. So, like these are coaches that I've always been like, yo, these are my kind of coaches. And I wanted to get you out of there on that because I wanted to flip this forward and kind of give our listeners our weekly kind of in your coach's head. When dealing with players, how do you handle the player after you're the cause for the player to have a blow up?
Well, I don't know that I don't know how often I'm trying to think of an example. I don't want to sound like it. Like how often am I the cause of the blow up? I mean, I can't even give me an example.
If you rode a kid hard, pause. But if you got on that kid a lot and you kind of pushed him, and then they had a blow up, how do you handle it after that? Is it something where you go, all right, maybe I was the one that kind of pushed them to that, and so it's easier to reset? Is it something that lingers? Is it a conversation that you have to have? Like, how do you get things back to level after the blow up? If you know you're the impetus for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one because honestly, I don't know that it goes down like that, exactly like that a lot. But it could be something. I mean, if it's a total lack of effort or focus, or there's something gone on earlier that day or that week where someone off the court is, you know, just not holding up their end of the bargain, then I might be ribbing someone. But normally, even if I am, they're just going to acknowledge it because, you know, so it's rare that I'm just riding someone for the sake of riding it, even though back in the day, maybe still that's, I think I've got a little bit of a reputation for that, but if I was though, if what you're talking about was the way something happened, then I'm grabbing him after practice privately. And I'm sitting down. If it's a conversation we can have right there in the gym, because there's not too many people around, then off to the side we will. But if I think it's more appropriate to go up to the office, then we'd do that. And if it was really sensitive, by the way, I'd have my assistant with me as well. Normally, I mean, I would tell you two things on it. I'm getting off track a bit, but I'm typically if I'm trying to get after, I usually get after the team a little bit, trying to raise the team's a level, not pointing out or targeting or something like that individual kids. Now that being said, every once in a while, the opposite is true. Like I try to you know, like if they know you're coaching up the best player in your team, or right, you got to make sure to some extent, if you're any sort of emotional coach at all, you got to make sure that, you know, things are fair and equal. So, you know, if I've got to make sure I'm coaching up my best player or the best kid, or, you know, just can't be the same guy all the time is what I'm kind of telling you there. And so now a lot of times I'll speak to the team through one guy. I call it spreading the wealth, but, you know, like, hey, that's not good enough. Like, come on now, that, you know, that's three layups in a row you've missed, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're just going to keep missing layups. What the heck are we doing on offense, or something like that? Basically, I'm talking, you know, at the kid who's missed a couple of layups, but really I'm talking to the whole team. But I don't have I don't have that one kid that I'm killing day after day. That doesn't work for anybody.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a day after day thing. What I found, and it might just be because of the level that I'm at, you know, what I've run into is you get on a kid, if you reprimand a kid, if you get on them, if you throw a couple shots to them, they're coming back. They're coming back with something. I see it in the classroom a lot too. And so, like, my rule of thumb is if I was the person to get you to elevate like that, then I'm not going to, like, whatever happened from it, I'm not going to reprimand you for it.
Yeah,
I'm going to take that as the, hey, you clearly you understand because you rose to that level. I can bring it back down. It's cool. We're good. But I know that there have been people who do that, who get a kid like that and then punish the kid because the kid went left after they felt like they were being attacked. And so, like, I think it's, I always look at it and think it's important for one, the kid to know, hey, anybody can get this, right? Anybody can get it. This right. isn't just you. This isn't because I dislike you. This isn't because I have something against you. If I'm, and then secondly, if I'm getting on you, it's for a legitimate reason. It's not right. just some cookie cutter made up whatever where you can be like, oh, well, everybody was doing it, but he decided to point me out, you know, or he got on me. Like, it's a, okay, yeah, I was doing that, but, and once you say the but, okay, cool. Now you've acknowledged that what I was saying was true. Now we need to get to a point where you can get the butt out of it.
Hey, look, right? I know what you're talking about. I know is real. Okay. And my wife comes home with elementary school stories, for God's sake, where kids will act out and act back. So I know what you're talking about is real. You hit on something there that I know. I always say, you know, 64 years old, even though I feel 30, there ain't that much good about 64 because, like, you're only 19 years from Coach Knight or a day away from, or you don't know, right? So, so there aren't a lot of good things sometimes getting older, but one of them is in teaching and coaching business for sure, like, kids don't take things as personally. Like, they don't, and one, I don't make them personal, but two, they don't take things from me personally. And I think both sides of that are important, right? It's not personal. It's not this or that. You alluded to that. But they also don't take it personally from me as a general rule. Sometimes I got to say now, hey, you're treading that line. Like, this is, you're making me wanna, like, even with the team, like, I'm not kidding around here. But that's something better about as you get older. It kind of works to your, that part of it works to your advantage. There are things that work to your disadvantage for sure. And I had another thought on it too that you'd said, but I lost it. I do think it's I know. Like in prep schools, I had someone tell me this too, and they're not wrong. But hey, Whit, like, you know, hey, you know, you could coach other places. You could do this. You could do that. I said, yeah. And I said, but your situation now, You know, they kind of need you. And there's two. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as I've always looked at it more, again, as a dance. Two people are doing, we're working together. I mean, it's fundamentally the way I do look at it. But I get the fact that in their eyes, you know, and okay, hey, Coach Witt, you can help me, and I need this. So they're going to be very careful, perhaps more careful than they might be in another situation. Even if it was, you know, I could be a Division III head coach, and they could say they might not want to be there in the first place. And now they perceive me as some sort of bad guy or wronging them. And they'd probably come at me more than I might deal with that same incident here, because they're still trying to get somewhere. So I get that too. Like, I might not have as many issues as a lot of coaches above and below the perceived level, right? Just different levels. Because, you know, they've got to mind their P's and Q's a little bit. I mean, that's kind of boarding school 101, you know. But, and I don't take advantage of that, I don't think, as a general rule, but I get it, I guess.
That's fair. I mean, I think environment definitely plays a role, right? Environment, yeah. Situation definitely plays a role in how we respond. It could be in certain cases in high school coaching that player knows that, hey, look, I'm just out here because I want to play high school sports. I don't have any delusions about playing in college, so I don't need to take this ish from you. Like, I can go and work. And you know what I usually tell them? Hey, you should go and work. Right? Like, I have told many kids, and we'll end on this because I thought that was a great point by you. I've told many kids that don't play sports because somebody else told you that you should be playing. If your motivation for playing is not coming for you, then go and do what motivates you. Go and do what you love. Go and do what inspires you. Go and do what gets you excited. Because I've never had a day where I was like not excited to play basketball. I'd never had a day where I was not excited to go to basketball practice. Not one. Not one. Ever. But I've had days where I did not want to go to football practice. Ta-da! Right?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. It was, you know, I played football and I enjoyed football. But it wasn't the same level of love for playing the game as the love for playing basketball was, and just being in it. So if you're listening out there, if you have a kid and your kid is 6'6" and has some athleticism, like, I know it's so tempting. It's so to push them and push them and put the battery in their back. But if you don't see a genuine love for the sport, please, for the love of God, find something that kid really wants to do with their time. Find something that they really and really truly are invested in, and push them towards that. And if they come back to basketball, great. If they come back to football, great. But if they really want to play the piano, then go out and pay for that kid to get some piano lessons, because that's what they really want to do.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Whit. Finish this off.
Yeah, I was just going to say, on that note, you know, as kind of a final thought by one of our return players, good player for us, came to me after yesterday's practice. Hey, Coach, that was great. You know, you got to coach us up like that. I don't know if he said always or more often or something like that. And I duly noted, you know, we had pretty animated practice. We won our first game earlier this week. And, you know, that was his reaction to it. And meanwhile, I got to go home and go like, my God, I'll have a freaking heart attack if I, you know, every single day, or you guys would tune me out, or, you know, cause every day is different, is kind of the way I don't go, you know, I don't, you know, some days you might have an idea of, you know, okay, I got to rattle the bushes a little bit here. I got to go easy here. Maybe we need a good hard one. I mean, you have different practice plans every day. I know we'll have a pod on that stuff. You know, it's just kind of funny where and it was great for him to say that, because that also means that I haven't been over the top all fall, obviously. It means, you know, he's still hearing and listening and wants more and, you know, all of that. So I appreciate very much him sharing that with me. I did coach some football too, and I would have I'd like to think that if I had been a football coach of yours, you would have loved it, because I just think, you know, it for me, one of the things, again, is back to that competitive that competitive piece. And I think football, mm-hmm. there are a lot of coaches who think football a whole lot of fun. So I yeah. hear you loud and clear on the football point, but I know, and I've been around coaches where it's been a lot of fun. But let's take that one up another day, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Coach Whitley Jerome, Coach Gene Clemens. Make sure that you follow us everywhere that you're following your podcast at. We really do appreciate you being around. And until next time, peace.